greetings once again out there to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, and I thought, you know, in light of just a full-on webinar today, I wanted to bring in an old friend and address a specific topic for everyone as we ponder where the metals are headed in 2018. One of the things we've been talking about quite a bit here at the site are these kind of three prongs that I see the metals being propelled forward with next year, and that's we'll call it political risk. That's going to become more apparent as the year goes on. Geopolitical risk, which is, I mean, that's pretty obvious. But then also we'll call it de-dollarization risk, something we've all talked about, geez, for about as long as this site's been around, right? But we're finally beginning to see things move forward. And so to that end, I thought we're going to bring in a good old friend of mine that I think is an expert and has studied this quite thoroughly, and that's Alistair McLeod. Most of you know Alistair. Like I said, he's been here for quite a while. He's a respected member of the gold community, but he's also head of research at Gold Money. And like I said, a well-respected expert in the field. So, Alistair, thank you for your time this morning.
That's my pleasure, Craig.
Hey, and before we get right to the gist of it, update everybody on Gold Money. I understand you guys are now trading in Bitcoin as well. If somebody wants to cash out some Bitcoin and buy some gold, they can do that now in other cryptocurrencies as well. They can do that now at Gold Money, right?
Yes, I think we, when it comes to funding an account, we take a number of cryptocurrencies, but we also offer the facility for people to deal in Bitcoin as opposed to just use a cryptocurrency to fund an account. So I think the main thing is that anyone who uses our platform knows that we do full KYC, anti-money laundering, alter banking standard, and all the rest of it. So the risk that you have with an exchange, and that is that the Fed might raid it or something, that is minimized in our case. And we basically put I don't understand the technology, but as I understand it, we hold your Bitcoin safe in, if you like, cold storage. So again, I think that the hacking risks and all the rest of it are minimized. So it's a service which our customers want. And, if our customers want something, we try and provide it.
Yep. Great stuff. Well, we've always enjoyed working with Gold Money all the way back to the beginning of TFMR, which is now, geez Louise, Alistair, 7 or 8 years ago. all right, so now as we head into 2018, like I said, we've got all these different things that will be quite the focus of attention in the new year in 2018. I think I misspoke there a second ago. But Alistair, the thing I want to talk to you about is this, what is now apparently right on the horizon, and that's this yuan-denominated crude oil contract. We've already got the yuan-denominated gold contract in Shanghai. And now they've been running tests. They're making sure it's ready to go. And they must be getting close because there was this talk about a week ago of Trump wanting to use the term economic aggressor when it comes to China. Alistair, if anything, tell everybody a little bit about that contract, what you know of it, the yuan-denominated crude oil contract, and then how and why so many people think it could be a real game changer in this de-dollarization movement.
Okay. Well, the first thing to say is the contract is ready to go. It's all set up. The energy exchange, which is a subset of, as I understand it, of the Shanghai International Futures Exchange, is all ready to go. They've done all the testing and all the rest of it, and all they need is the government to say go. So that's in place. The problem really with it is that it is quite likely that some oil exporters to China, who are being encouraged, incidentally, very strongly to use the yuan in settlement rather than the dollar for their oil sales, might want to use financial instruments to hedge their Chinese yuan. And of course, if you look at a country like Iran, who basically is blacklisted by for using the dollar, and in any event, they don't want to use Satan's currency, which is the way they look at it. They are quite likely to hedge quite a bit of their oil sales, for which they're paid in yuan, into physical gold. So the problem that the Chinese have now seen is that when they first planned this oil for yuan contract, and this has been cooking ever since, I think, 2012, mm-hmm. They suddenly realized that actually this could generate huge demand for physical gold in the market. Not only that, but it would destroy the petrocurrency, and therefore it would destroy the status of the dollar as the international trade settlement currency. Now, they're going there anyway, but they want to get there at a pace which doesn't destroy America and the West in the process, if I can put it crudely.
Yeah.
So that has been the reason the whole thing has been held back. I think the most recent development is important because Saudi Arabia, as we are all aware, is doing more and more business with China. They're now competing with Russia, which has overtaken them in terms of being the largest supplier to China. And they've also got Angola. Angola are accepting yuan. Russia is accepting yuan. Now, that leaves Saudi Arabia at a disadvantage. Saudi Arabia also have the problem that they need money. The only country with deep enough pockets to help bail them out is one of their major customers, and that's China. So they're not in the position anymore, really, to protect the petrodollar, which was first set up in agreement between Nixon and King Faisal back in 1973. Mm-hmm. So you can see this is a problem. Now, I think as soon as Saudi Arabia begins to accept yuan in payment for her oil, and I believe that this is likely to happen in the new year, the pressure to introduce instruments to help Saudi Arabia manage her foreign exchange risk obviously is going to become considerably greater. And it's almost impossible to see a situation where China just stands back and says, we want you to pay in yuan, but guess what? We're not going to provide you with the financial facilities to do anything with your yuan. So, this is complete nonsense, particularly when you bear in mind that Dubai has already a gold yuan contract. Now, if I was in the DIFC, which is the Dubai International Financial Center, I would think to myself, look, we've got all these boys around here. We've got Iran, we've got Saudi, we've got Qatar and all the rest of it. And they're having to accept yuan more and more and more. Okay, why don't I do an oil contract settled in yuan? It's there. So actually, if China doesn't do it, someone else is going to do it. And I think this is the point which people don't really appreciate, that while China has been controlling, if you like, the rate of at which people have been moving over from using the dollar for trade settlement into using the yuan for trade settlement, I think that's getting beyond her control now, because there are other people prepared to provide these facilities if the Chinese are too slow in doing so. So this is an exciting thing. And I think 2018, we're going to look back on it as the year, I think, when the petrodollar was destroyed, or it began to be destroyed. And of course, as soon as you start destroying the petrodollar, you're then asking a very fundamental question. Which is the largest trading nation in the world? China, by a long, long chalk. Mm-hmm. Where's America in this? America is retreating from international trade. She's talking about putting in tariffs, stopping foreigners selling her stuff. So actually, we've got a situation where you've got this reserve currency, which everybody is using, and the currency is issued by someone who actually doesn't want to have anything to do with foreign trade. So, to me, it's a no-brainer. I can see this being a really negative story for the dollar in 2018. And I think this is such an important point, which is underappreciated. I mean, it's just absolute craziness. I mean, we're now sort of edging on to Trump's trade policy, if you like. But effectively what we have, America is trying. She issued this national security document earlier this week. What she's saying in that is that we want to continue to control the world, and we will do so by military means. That effectively is the subtext in the whole thing.
Right.
China and Russia, on the other hand, who are operating in partnership, don't want to go down the military road. They're going down the financial road. And when it comes to destroying anyone, absent a nuclear war, really, the country which is on the wrong end of this is America, because all China and Russia need do is just, if you like, just effectively take steps to remove the dollar from the international trade system. And it's something which they can do probably quite quickly. When I say quite quickly, over a period of just a year or two. Now, on top of that,
excuse me,
bear in mind that international portfolio investments are very heavily angled towards dollars, mainly because we had a dollar bull market until the beginning of this year. And if you had your investments in any other currency, you were effectively losing out, mm-hmm. Particularly if you're accounting in dollars in any sense. So with everyone overweight in dollars, and at the last count, we're talking mid-2016, it was $17.3 trillion of portfolio investments held by foreigners. You can see that the potential for dollars to be sold mm-hmm. from foreign hands back into the United States
right.
is absolutely enormous when this trade story hits the fan.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, a very interesting juncture. And of course, gold is the other side of the dollar. You know, if you're going to sell the dollar, what do you buy? You can buy Chinese yuan. And I wouldn't dissuade you from doing that, because the Chinese are managing their currency in line with the general level of industrial commodity prices. They've been doing this for the last 3 years, so far as I can see. But the other thing you could buy is gold. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to run out and buy gold, but the gold prices is going to begin to reflect, I think, not only a weakening dollar, but a dollar which is demonstrably on the run.
I'm sitting here thinking, Alistair, as you've described it, if someone were to go to Shanghai, say this contract gets put in place, and you sell your crude oil for yuan, but yet the Chinese are not, they don't really have the facilities for you then to roll it into yuan treasuries, let's call it that, Chinese sovereign debt. And instead, they're almost encouraging you to trade your yuan for gold, isn't that almost like a de facto backing of the yuan with gold? Because that's basically what the dollar was, right, prior to removal of the gold standard.
Yes, you're not getting the convertibility into gold. And this is one thing I think I should make absolutely clear. Bear in mind that there are two yuan. There's an onshore yuan
right.
in onshore China, and there's an offshore yuan.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively, what the Chinese are saying is, we want you to sell your commodities to us, and we will pay you in yuan.
Right.
They'll even say, we'll give you a better deal in yuan than in dollars. Perhaps. I mean, I think that's part of the subtext in their approach. Then what they're going to be saying, as they provide these facilities for you to do whatever hedging or whatever you want to do, is, if you want to hedge into gold, we're not going to sell you the gold, because our gold is ring-fenced domestically. We're hanging on to our government gold, which between us is considerably understated, but
right.
also the citizens, the residents in China, are not allowed to sell their gold for overseas currencies. So, you know, you're going to have to go into the market and buy gold. So we have a situation where they've already cleared out the West of its loose gold stock, if you like, and goodness knows how many central banks are over-reporting their gold holdings because they've got commitments against it, or it's been delivered out and they haven't admitted it, and all the rest of it. The effect on the gold price actually could be quite substantial.
Dramatic.
And And now, again, the Chinese do understand this. They do understand that they've actually hit the point where, in trying to persuade people to deal with them in their, you know, in Chinese offshore yuan, they are going to drive up the gold price and they're going to drive down the dollar, because all these relationships are going that way. And it's almost like they're on a cliff edge and the dollar is about to go down. The effect of that is obviously going to be very detrimental to anything priced in dollars. It's going to be very detrimental to the US economy. It's almost like declaring a financial nuclear conflict, if you like, with the American economy.
Yep.
And with every other currency, which ties itself to the dollar, which basically is the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that this situation does need some very, very careful handling. Now, I think Chinese have actually handled all this very, very well. They've been very patient. They've been sitting back and saying, you know, we're not doing anything. We're just letting the Americans make the mistakes. And that as a policy has worked very, very well. We're now in the situation where they can't really control it quite in that sense anymore. There is a momentum, I think, building underneath markets, which basically tell us that it's completely wrong for the largest trading nation in the world to turn around and say it doesn't want the one currency, the reserve currency, which is issued by the country that is withdrawing itself from international trade.
Right.
I mean, this is just craziness, absolute craziness. And I don't think the Chinese can really control it quite in the way in which they have in the past. I mean, they've very much encouraged everybody to use the yuan. They have been backpedaling when it comes to providing important hedging tools, particularly this energy for yuan contract, oil for yuan contract. But I don't think they're in control of the timing quite as much anymore. And I think that's we're getting to this sort of point where, you know, suddenly there's going to be something's got to break.
Well, and that's where I wanted to go here toward the end, Alistair, because and thank you for that distinction, because that's important to note. I mean, it's not so much the de facto yuan-backed or gold-backed yuan like I was mentioning, because the gold's not going to come from the Chinese reserves. I mean, any gold that gets settled in a in this swapping of yuan for gold is going to come from the open market. And so that's a very important distinction, because that obviously has upward pressure on the price through demand. So now, Alistair, as we put it then together, you brought up an excellent point about maybe someone in Dubai, some organization in Dubai jumping the gun and not necessarily forcing the Chinese hand, but just kind of speeding the process up by recognizing an economic opportunity to begin a contract like this. The Chinese seem to be getting close. We had this test run couple of weeks ago where they said this is the fifth time, we wanted to make sure all the facilities work. In our final minutes, Alistair, what is the likelihood, do you think, of these events beginning to take place in 2018?
I think I can't see how they cannot take place because, you know, as you've just said, I mean, you've got guys sitting in Dubai thinking, you know, we're going to make money. What's the next idea?
Right.
Ahmed. Well, the answer is very simple. We'll have an oil contract in yuan, because Iran, just across the water, is selling oil to China. Saudi Arabia is doing exactly the same thing, and the Chinese are investing in Saudi Arabia and bailing Saudi Arabia out. And by the way, they will probably buy that 5% stake in Aramco.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a no-brainer, really. So, yeah.
The gold
hegemony,
interest, I think, is
important to understand. I think in context, and that is, I think the Chinese, you know, when they sort of sat down, I don't know, some time ago, and sort of worked out their financial strategy, let's call it their financial war strategy, they probably thought, well, you know, the big risk in this is that we actually destroy Western currencies. Now, if that's the case, we've got to survive that. And the only way we can survive that is to own the one asset which is no one else's liability, and that is gold.
Yep.
And so I think it's worth bearing in mind that the regulations that appointed the People's Bank of China to begin to accumulate gold on behalf of the state were dated in 1983. They have been accumulating gold since then. You know, all through those years when it went down through the big bear market all the way down to $250, $260 in 2000, 2002, and since. In 2002, a decision was taken to let the people buy gold. Now, this is very important because that tells us that at that stage, the state had acquired a substantial quantity of undeclared gold, not held, if you like, in official reserves, but held, call it off balance sheet, if you like. So much gold had been acquired that they felt comfortable to encourage ordinary people to begin to acquire gold. Now, as a matter of principle, if you want to have a greater level of peace in a country which has got all these diverse ethnic groups, there's something like 42 different ethnic groups in China, I think. You know, I mean, if you didn't have a strong man at the top holding the whole thing together in a police state, I mean, it would be like the Arab Spring, you know, quintupled. I mean, it really would be enormous, enormous chaos. That is why they have no democracy in China. But if you're going to get people to stay together through a financial war, then the best way to do it is make sure they've got some gold. Because if they've got gold, they have got a reason not to go out on the streets and disrupt the status quo. Yep. Very, very important point.
Yep.
And I think the way I see the Chinese strategy is gold is central to it. It's central because it is the biggest insurance policy that they could possibly have against the West, either falling apart or declaring financial war openly against China. But what it means is that, it's fine so long as you can control the timing of things. But when the timing of things starts slipping from your hands, then we have a situation where events just take, if you like, a momentum of their own. And I think 2018 looks like it could be that time.
I agree, my friend. It is going to be a wildly unpredictable year. And gosh, just that alone screams additional gold ownership. And it's we're going to have a fun time discussing it. At this point, Alistair, I want to thank you for spending some time. Because I know it's a busy time of year, even though it's a relaxing time of year. And your insights are just extraordinarily valuable. And I know everybody benefited from listening to this. So my friend, I want to wish you Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And then we'll see if we can't get back together in January or February and kind of take this conversation in a kind of more full context and see how things have already changed.
Yes, no, I'd very much like that, Craig. And I'd like to wish everybody in Turdville not only a very happy Christmas, but also a very successful 2018.
I'm all for it. Alistair, thank you so much. And again, all the best. And we will talk to you again soon. And everybody out there that's been listening, thanks for listening. And get ready for a wild 2018.